Over the past 20 years or so, WVIA listeners could look forward to hearing occasional audio essays from Fiona Powell, the station's longtime Susquehanna Valley producer and host. Essays on holidays and seasonal changes, Boxing Day, Lammas in August, the winter solstice. She would reflect on literature too, on Jane Austen, and on English history. Here's what Fiona brought to us on St. David's Day, March 1st, 2019.
David is the patron saint of Wales and is unique in the British Isles in that he is the only patron saint of the Isles of Britain who was a native of the land he represents. Andrew was not Scottish. Patrick was not Irish. Pyrrhon was not Cornish. George was not English. But David was born in about the year 520 in a raging storm to St. Non, who was sheltering in a shepherd's hut on the cliffs of Pembrokeshire, very close to the religious house he was to found at what is now St. David's Cathedral. The foundations of that shepherd's hut can still be visited and is a place of pilgrimage. St. David was considered so important to the medieval church that the Pope decreed that three pilgrimages to St. David's Cathedral in Wales was equivalent to two pilgrimages to Rome or one to Jerusalem. St. David's Day is important to many Pennsylvanians because of the sheer number of Welsh who have emigrated to Pennsylvania, beginning with Welsh Quakers who came here with William Penn, who was of Welsh descent and wanted this Commonwealth to be named New Wales. From that time on, we have emigrated to Pennsylvania in waves. The slate workers, then the iron workers, the coal miners, the steel workers, and the smaller wave of immigrants from the stresses of British financial chaos in the late 1980s, of which I am one. At one time, there were more people of Welsh descent in Pennsylvania than in any other state. Wales today is a forward-looking country, displaying technological excellence. But Wales is a nation aware and respectful of its ancient traditions. So on this St. David's Day, I shall bring you the oldest lullaby known in Welsh, Paes de Nogat, sung by Lynn Denman of the group Ffynnon. This lullaby has been part of the oral tradition since the 6th century, so about the time that St. David himself walked the hills of Wales. Two interesting things about this ancient lullaby. The words are about a speckled blanket or bunting made from the skin of the pine marten worn by the baby, and about the baby's father being out hunting with his dogs, Giff and Gaff. So it's thought that the nursery rhyme by Baby Bunting may have been derived from this lullaby. And in this lullaby, an ancient counting system based on Welsh is recited. Yan tan tethera pethera pimp. This counting system is still used by shepherds in many parts of Britain, and it's from this counting system that the nursery rhyme Hickory Dickory Dock was derived. Do ye the little things in life, advised St. David. Happy St. David's Day. Discwill Dewi Hapus.
Guys. Paestin ogar fraith fraith, Cruin melawad ban raith, Wyr, wyr, wydogaeth, Gochan yn gochen yn saith gaeth. Paestin ogar fraith fraith, Cruin melawad ban raith, Wyr, wyr, wydogaeth, Gochan yn gochen yn wech gaeth.
Fiona Powell bringing us this ancient Welsh lullaby in an audio essay on St. David's Day in 2019. Fiona is a folklorist and professional storyteller who recently retired as WVIA's Susquehanna Valley producer and host. We had a chance to speak by phone with Fiona Powell in advance of this weekend's experience. We began at the very beginning and asked her how and when she first came to storytelling.
I can't really remember when it began. Certainly when I was a child, I was very fortunate to have a family who were very involved in theater, very involved in performance. My father was a lawyer, which he always used to joke and say that was just acting in a different way. And my mother's side of the family, which was our predominant influence when I was a child, they were all very, very involved in performance and theater. My uncle Dennis was a great amateur folk singer and raconteur and storyteller. Whenever we got together at Christmas, all of the games, and I always thought this was normal because you do as a child, but all of the games were word games and writing poetry and writing little ditties and limericks. These were the games we played at Christmas as a family. So for me, the world of story was always around me, but I became fascinated by folk tales probably when I was about 7 or 8 years old. And it was my uncle who bought me my very first book of Celtic folklore. And I don't know when that was, 8, 9 years old, something like that. And he was an amazing storyteller. And that's when I became fascinated by the world of story. But I didn't pursue it. I didn't think of pursuing it as a career. I was too busy being a farm worker, being first a dairy maid and then a shepherd for years and years in agriculture. As you well know, as probably anyone who's ever met me knows, is my number one passion and always will be. So I was pursuing work on farms, and I would tell stories, but it was only, you know, for laughs and for my family and for my children. And then when I came over here as a very skilled farm worker, as a very skilled shepherd, in fact, I had qualified as a farm manager, and I was hoping to pursue farming as a farm worker over here, not running my own farm, but in the same way that I had in Britain, going to other people's farms and running their lambing pens for them and helping out at shearing time. And I discovered to my horror that, A, there aren't enough sheep in America, and still aren't. Not enough flocks, not enough large flocks. And you've either got tiny, wee little flocks that don't need any help, or you have to go out to the west, and there are massive flocks out there. Completely different to the 400 to 1,000 ewes that I was used to. So I didn't know what to do with myself. And this was for the first probably 5 years of my time here in the United States. I did not know what to do with myself. And then by happenstance, a friend of my daughter's heard me telling stories and said, "You're very good. Could my church hire you for the weekend to tell stories? Because we've got an event." And that's how I got into it as a profession.
Once you did that and accepted that invitation, then you began to search for stories. How did you build your stock of stories?
I've always been a collector of stories. I've had the capacity to hear a story and have it stick. Always had that capacity. Also had the capacity to hear a song and remember the lyrics. I'm no singer, but if I hear a song twice, I'll know the lyrics. So I've always collected stories because stories have always been a passion of mine. always collected folk tale, books of folk tales and books of folklore that still sit on my shelves all the time. So I was always asking people stories, whether it was their own stories or stories they knew, stories from their childhood. Even when I was a very young girl, I would collect stories from older people. And once I got into storytelling, I realized that that was an amazing resource. For example, when I was 18, 19 years old, I was told some stories by a man who was in his 90s, some historical stories by a man who was in his 90s. And he said something to me that has always stuck. He said, you know, you take this situation, you're still a teenager and I'm in my 90s. We only have to do that 10 times before we're back to 1066 to somebody who is very old, telling somebody who's a teenager in 1066 about their life. And isn't that extraordinary thought? Stuck with me.
What we recognize is that you have gotten into the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts programs as a resident storyteller. You have worked with young ones and seniors and everybody in between. You tell adult stories, you tell children's stories, and also cross-cultural stories. So you're listening for the similarities and the differences between and among the stories, even though the theme might be the same.
Absolutely. I've always had a deep belief that if you want to tell a good story of good folk tale, you need to collect that folk tale from somebody whose story it is, from their people, from their background. So I've always had a very hard and fast rule that, for example, I wouldn't tell a story from Australia unless I had spoken to somebody who had lived in Australia or had been part of that culture. And I would not tell a Pennsylvania folktale until I had been here long enough to understand Pennsylvania. Well, Welsh folktales are in my blood and in my background, but that's always been a hard and fast rule. If I hear a great story, unless I'm told it by somebody whose tradition it is, I don't tell it. And I ask their permission, and I ask them, what are the important things about your culture that I need to understand in order to be able to honor that story?
So that's the ultimate respect for the culture, the person, the story, the tradition, all of that in what you've just described.
Well, storytelling is a deep, deep tradition. It's one that every human being has. Who knows? Maybe even the animals have it, but we don't know that. But we know that every human being has. And every human being has that instinct to understand the stories of their ancestors.
What happens when you go into the classroom? Let's pick the youngest ones. And I know you enchant them, but what do they come away with when they hear a story about an animal that is doing something that they are surprised and delighted with, for example?
It's very different telling stories to small children than telling stories to older people. But the one thing that people often say to me is that children have no attention span, and that's absolute, I'm sorry, nonsense. I'm sorry, but it is. Children have incredible attention spans. It's just that they don't listen by sitting still. They listen by moving to the sound. They move to the sounds of the words, and they first engage in story, which is why nursery rhymes are so important, by the continuous sounds, that's what they react to. And you can get a baby of 6 weeks or even younger reacting, but that's the youngest I've ever told a story to a six-week-old baby. They'll respond to the sound. They'll respond to the sound. And the older they get, they respond to the words, and they love words. And they respond to the rhythm of the story, which is why you end up having to repeat things over and over. And anyone who's told stories to children will recognize this. This is why you have to tell them the same story 50 times over, and they never get bored. They become enchanted. But they are realists. They're amazingly, you know, I'll tell you a story about a little boy. I was telling stories at a Head Start, not far from where you are now. And the Head Start teacher was young, and she was very, very worried because when I told the story of the three little pigs, and I do it not in the conventional sense because I want the children to interact over the three little pigs and experience and ask questions about the three little pigs. And she was very, very worried that the wolf gobbles down the pigs, who are stupid enough, and I'm quoting a child, stupid enough to build their house out of straw or out of sticks because they did not listen to their mother. And the teacher was getting very worried, and she pulled me to one side, but it was within earshot of these children. Now, these children were 4 years old, and she said, I don't like the way you tell that story. You can't have the wolf eating the pigs because that's gory and violent, and we don't do violence. And one little boy stood up and indignantly said, but it just is. And we looked at her, and I said, did you mean justice? He said, yes, just is. You have to have just is in a story. At four, they get it. They get it. They absolutely get it. And the violence doesn't... I mean, obviously, you don't do gore and blood and nastiness. And actually, I don't do gore and blood and nasty and horror when I'm telling stories to adults.
And Fiona, when you tell stories, you pack up your spinning wheel.
I do.
Tell us what that does for you as a storyteller.
It helps me tremendously. No, I'm giving away the tricks of the trade now. Every story, you need a moment in every storytelling. You need moments where you can gather yourself. And because you're always running about three sentences or three, you're running to the next point. You're running to the next point. And if you're not very careful, you can get lost. And I've been there. Every storyteller in the world has been there when they think, oh, my goodness, I got to this part of the story and I forgot to tell them that thing. And that thing is very important. So I've got to find a way to come back, you know. But the spinning wheel gives you an excuse to pause and gather yourself. And the audience doesn't notice. It's like music in the middle of something, you know. It gives you a moment to pause. But it also, the spinning wheel does something extraordinary to the audience. It gives them a focal point, and it has a, you know, I can't explain why, because I've realized this in my early days of storytelling, but it has an almost mesmerizing effect on people. And I think it's because it's such an ancient instrument. It relates people to their past. It relates people back to their ancestors. And it relates back to that whole aspect of a little old lady sitting by the fire, spinning and telling. And I am a little old lady sitting by the fire, spinning and telling now. But it does relate back to that. So it gives us a connection that I can't... It's spooky. It really is. But it works.
Are you concerned about the state of storytelling in this world of screen time all the time?
Sometimes. Sometimes. In some senses, it's great because people are more interested in story. But in other senses, and I think this is the case with all traditional performers, whether they are fiddling or whether they are playing an instrument, being a pianist, the thing is convincing people that it's as important, if not more important, to experience these things live. It's the same as convincing people to come out to an orchestra. We know why that live performance is important, but a lot of people might think, well, I can pop on a CD and listen to Rachmaninoff, and I don't have to ever look at an orchestra playing Rachmaninoff. And it's the same sort of thing. So what worries me is that I spend more and more and more time having to teach people the importance of story. Once they see it in action, they're fine, they're hooked, they get it. But it's getting those people into that situation, especially with children's storytelling. They don't see the relevance of it. And we get back to the children have a short attention span thing. Well, they'll say, well, come and tell a story, but please don't tell a story for more than 5 minutes because the children are going to get bored. All right. They don't. But I think it's so important to keep storytelling going. It is so important. It is probably, it's one of the oldest arts in the world, possibly the first. Probably we were telling stories even before we picked up whatever we picked up to try and make rhythm. We probably started telling stories first because it's what a mother does with her baby. So probably those early mums with their babies told the first stories. And those rhythms remain, and they're important. And I think we will start to protect the earth when we... Well, that's one of the most important things about storytelling, is that when you tell stories, you start appreciating the traditions and you start protecting the world around you.
Fiona Powell, folklorist and professional storyteller who recently retired as WVIA's Susquehanna Valley producer and host. St. David's Society of Wyoming Valley invites the community to celebrate St. David's Day with two special events, one on February 28th and the other on March 1st. The festivities begin with an evensong for the Feast of St. David, and that's at 6:30 p.m. Saturday, February 28th at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church, 35 South Franklin Street in downtown Wilkes-Barre. The celebration continues Sunday, this Sunday, March 1st, with the 147th annual St. David's Day Banquet held at the Westmoreland Club, 59 South Franklin Street in Wilkes-Barre. Refreshments at 4 o'clock, dinner served at 5. Wilkes-Barre City Councilman and historical preservationist Tony Brooks will serve as Toastmaster, and this year's featured guest speaker is Fiona Siobhan Powell, and she will speak as she's just done with us now, and she'll share some wonderful stories. The St. David's Society of the Wyoming Valley is dedicated to preserving and celebrating Welsh heritage and culture in the greater Wilkes-Barre region. And if you'd like to take part, you should give the group a call. And that's area code 570-262-3025. Area code 570-262-3025. To hear our guest and WVIA's retired producer from the Susquehanna Valley, Fiona Powell, it's a St. David's Day banquet, the 147th annual of the St. David's Society of the Wyoming Valley. It will take place at the Westmoreland Club, 59 South Franklin Street in Wilkes-Barre, beginning with a social hour at 4 and dinner at 5. And for more information and to make reservations, area code 570-262-3025. Thank you, Fiona Powell. So good to hear you again.